We're reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, 3rd canto, 31st chapter, The Movements of the Living Entities, text number 32.
Yaja sadbe pati puna Sisno dara krito jamai Astitto ramate jantus Tamo visati purvava Yadi
If Asadbi with the unrighteous
Pati
on the path
Puna
again
Shishna
for the genitals.
Uddara
for the stomach.
Krita
done.
Ujjamai
whose endeavors.
Astitaha
associating.
Ramate
enjoys.
Jantu
the living entity.
Tamaha
darkness.
Vishrati
enters.
Purvavad
as before. Translation. If therefore the living entity again associates with the path of unrighteousness, influenced by sensually minded people engaged in the pursuit of sexual enjoyment and the gratification of the palate, he again goes to hell as before. So this is a series of verses which describes hellish punishments. So it's a little intense, this section of the Bhagavata. Purport. It has been explained that the conditioned soul is put into the under Tamisra and Tamisra hellish conditions. And after suffering there, he gets a hellish body like the dogs or hogs. After several such births, he again comes into the form of a human being. How the human being is born is also described by Kapila Dev. The human being develops in the mother's abdomen and suffers there and comes out again. After all these sufferings, if he gets another chance in a human body and wastes his valuable time in the association of persons who are concerned with sexual life and palatable dishes, then naturally he again glides down to the same under Tamisra and Tamisra hells. Generally, people are concerned with the satisfaction of the tongue and the satisfaction of the genitals. That is material life. Material life means eat, drink, be merry, and enjoy, with no concern for understanding one's spiritual identity and the process of spiritual advancement. Since materialistic people are concerned with the tongue, belly, and genitals, if anyone wants to advance in spiritual life, he must be very careful about associating with such people. To associate with such material men is to commit purposeful suicide in the human form of life. It is said, therefore, that an intelligent man should give up such undesirable association and should always mix with saintly persons. When he's in association with saintly persons, all his doubts about the spiritual expansion of life are eradicated and he makes tangible progress on the path of spiritual understanding. It is also sometimes found that people are very much addicted to a particular type of religious faith. Hindus, Muslims, and Christians are faithful in their particular type of religion, and they go to the church, temple, or mosque. But unfortunately, they cannot give up the association of persons who are too much addicted to sex life and satisfaction of the palate. Here, it is clearly said that one may officially be a very religious man, but if he associates with such persons, then he's sure to slide down to the darkest region of hell. We should not be surprised of descriptions of hell, because hell is something we have all encountered in our present situation already. None of us has been spared from some hellish situations where we were intensely suffering and being caught in a very unpleasant situation and there seemed no way out. So if that's not hell, then I don't know what hell is. So therefore, it is not at all difficult to appreciate that there may be planets within the universe that are worse than this one. Right? Because we can understand that there is a variety of people on this planet. A variety of people with different mentalities. And we see that certain people are very nice. They have very a gentle side. They are very considerate to others. And they're trying to do good. So obviously the destination of people who are trying to do good will be different from those who are totally ruthless, exploitive, and cold in their dealings with others. There are many people who are exploiting people in very nasty criminal ways, by getting involved in drugs and prostitution and so forth, or big power politics, right, where so many innocent people are killed. So such type of exploitation is extraordinarily sinful, and such a person must suffer. So therefore we should not be surprised that there will be places where the suffering is even more intense than on this planet, and that certain people can glide down to that form of existence. So the verse describing this is one thing. The purport is also very strong, because in the purport, really, illicit sex is condemned so strongly and described as an activity which will take people to hell, which is very difficult for modern people to accept, because illicit sex has become such a common activity, so much part of life, that it's virtually considered a bit too much to connect the idea that one might go to hell to this. Say, well, okay, there will be, obviously one cannot reach the higher levels of a saintly person, etc. One may be blocked, but to think that one so quickly goes to hell, how can this be? It is, after all, natural. Right? It is like something that is there in every living being. So how can we be so rigid? How can the Bhagavatam be so rigid in this respect? But we should not just underestimate the Bhagavatam. We should see that we may not ourselves appreciate the need for some heavy medicine. We may think like, well, we are basically good persons. But if if our materialistic tendencies are very deep, it is not just going to disappear so lightly. It will take some intense impressions to make us change our way to spiritual, in a spiritual direction. So therefore this suffering is really the response to our stubborn mentality. We are very stubbornly attached to sense enjoyment. Fortunately, Krishna consciousness is the solution. It can save the entire world from all hellish existence. I do not want to go deeply into a discussion on the hellish planets in this lecture. For me, it's enough to remember the hellishness of this particular place where we are. How I saw two buses and they just came from opposite directions, and they didn't hit each other, but they scraped each other. And we were standing with the car at the side of the road, and after the buses had gone, there was a little finger lying on the road. Yeah. It was really like, whoa. I can tell more horror stories, and maybe I should tell a few more just to show, illustrate. I was driving on my moped, you know, on Brommer, right, when I was 16, and there was a girl driving in front of me, also on her moped, and it was raining, and she lost control, and she fell, and a truck just drove right over her head, and I was right behind, a few meters behind. That was also heavy, very heavy. Also, once I saw in Mayapur a devotee who was an electrician working on the outside of the building, and somehow or other he must have gotten a shock. He suddenly fell backwards and landed on his head, and it made the sound of a pumpkin when it is thrown on the ground. Anyway, these are some horror stories of how we are seeing plenty of hellish things in this material world, and I could, on our own planet, right, in this very life, I've witnessed others suffer. I have suffered myself. I have seen physical suffering. I have seen intense mental suffering, and what can we say? I feel for that. Right? I feel for that. I feel that this is something we must get out of. You know, we cannot just walk around and write poetry about the butterflies and the daisies and just say how beautiful this world really is. I know. I've also seen wonderful beauty. I appreciated it also. And it has impressed me. I have seen wonderful beauty in nature. In the Himalayas, I saw beautiful things. Maybe that was maybe the most impressive. Right? But sometimes everywhere and anywhere, just some wonderful arrangement of nature, or beautiful things made by man also, and very beautiful. And I've appreciated all that very much, and the good of the world. I've seen people that are beautiful, not just physically beautiful, but really just very noble people. And although they may have had some faults, their noble hearts have deeply moved me, and I will always appreciate that. But I must say that the suffering that I've experienced was just too much. It was just too much, and I don't want no more. Right? And I see others, right, and what they have gone through, I'm also thinking, like, you know, it is just too much. So let us, therefore, let us look forward to the spiritual world. Let us look forward to devotional service. And let us just realize, whatever beauty and whatever good is here, it's not good enough to really make that a major goal in our life. We'd better go forward in spiritual life. We'd better. That is actually a sober point of view. If one's not sober, one becomes caught up in the passion of the moment and in the passion of the events, in the things we see around us, and we forget everything else. We forget the bigger picture. We forget what's going on. We forget the suffering of the material world. And this is the nature of the illusory energy, the events sweep us up in passion, and we become so involved with the immediate circumstances that we lose the broader vision of the long-term course of events. When we are more calm, we can see the full picture. We can see the whole chain of events of life. And if we look and we think like, well, no, it's not really a good idea to do it again. It's whatever, but let us not take another birth. And this should be, being here in the room, I see people, you know, have gone through so much. I see someone who went through the war in Sarajevo. You know, I've seen someone who's gone through so much mental anxiety. I see others who have lost their family members. I see broken marriages. I see all kinds of troubles, and I see my own life with plenty of mental and physical suffering, and thinking like, well, you know, let's look forward, and let us together create some serious spiritual culture. Some serious spiritual culture is really the only thing that can save us. We cannot just expect to be devotees so easily. It's not so simple to, in the middle of the material world, be a devotee. But what to do? And sometimes we are in the material world and, well, for a little while, we play a little with the material energy, and that can be, but still, the happiness and distress comes on its own accord. And in the midst of the distress, we are reminded, like, of the nature of this world and how really we should get out. And then we become again a little more serious about Krishna and about cultivating Krishna consciousness. So we need our little temple here in the Netherlands. We need it small. Maybe we can make it a little bigger by getting next door. That would be great. Then we can even breathe. Yeah. Let's start with that. And then later we maybe get another temple, but let's at least, you know, do something we can. Something we can do, right? Something that's not too far away, if the Lord desires, would be nice. We need to come here. Many of you have come from far. Some have come from very far as Estonia, as far as Heidelberg, you know, just to be here with us for a few days. This place is for us the most important place in Holland. I know it doesn't look very impressive, at least not to me, you know, but this is actually for us the most important place in Holland because it's our only shelter. Mm-hmm. This is our shelter. We are the family of devotees here, somehow or other, and we wound up here for some reason or other. Don't know what our previous karma was that brought us here. Cannot be that good because, because no, it says that, you know, like when you have very good karma, then you, get like lots of material facility. So we didn't get that, right? That's, so maybe our karma is not so good, but what to do? This is it. And we're going to do it with this. You know, we have to. Because we have no other alternative. We must be Krishna conscious, and we depend on coming here. Sometimes all of us think that, you know, I don't know why I'm going to this place, you know, I'm not going back. But then after some time, we realize we have to go back. There is nothing else. So this is important, even if we have to travel from our home to come to the temple, we must not hesitate to do it, even if there are some people in the temple that we don't like so much. Maybe so, but anyway, Krishna is there, and we need his mercy. So somehow or other, this is our saving grace. And again, we are looking forward to that. Srila Prabhupada had that vision to somehow or other create these little embassies of the spiritual world so that we could be saved. We cannot be preoccupied with material energy and trying to bring the material energy under control, because we will never be able to control the material energy. The more we try to control the material energy, the more we get controlled by the material energy. Modern man is trying to bring the material energy under control by means of technology. But the result is that so many circumstances are totally out of hand and not under our control. Like Prabhupada gives the example that the greatest symbol of power of the modern man is the nuclear energy. Right? That's the greatest energy they are controlling. And but that nuclear energy is totally out of control. Right? There are many problems with it. For one thing, everyone's afraid that a bomb may drop on our head. Right? So what have we achieved? Right? We're trying to control material nature, but material nature comes back in the form of death over our head. Right? So in this way, it is not at all the fact that we are in control. Prabhupada was saying that one day the animals had a meeting and they revolted against the control of man. And they were speaking, but even the elephant was saying that, he said, even I am under the control of man. So all the other animals were thinking, if the elephant is under the control of man, then what about us? You know, like, he's so much more powerful than we are. If even the most powerful of all animals is under control of man, how can we ever not be under the control of man? And the meeting, which was originally organized by an S, Prabhupada said, the meeting was organized by an S, and but in the end, the animals understood that it wasn't successful. So Prabhupada said, in the same way, we shouldn't be an S either and think that we are not controlled by the material energy. And Prabhupada was giving this story. I just read it this morning. Yes, this is what happens where we think that we can control the material energy. This is the trap. This is the trap. It looks like, yes, I'm controlling the material energy very nicely. I'm arranging it this way, that way. Success. Doing that. More success. I do it again. Success again. See? I got the tricks. I know exactly how to do it. You know? I can control the material energy. I can. I'm expert. This is actually the illusory energy at work. This is the prapsekatmika shakti of the illusory energy, the throwing potency of the illusory energy, throwing to us the sense that we are in control of the material energy. And the result is then after a little while we think, yes, I can do it. I can do it. And when we get really attached to this sense of I am in control, then things start to get out of hand gradually. Maybe Maya lets us build up our sense of control a little further before the kingdom is chopped down. But this is actually how it works. So the intelligent person can see that no one can ever remain in glorious in the material sense. There's no such thing. Bhagavatam in the Bhumi Gita is pointing out that many men have tried to possess the earth, and all that remains of them is names at best. Right? Some name in the history book. Napoleon, you know, Hitler, Julius Caesar, right? Where are they now? Who knows? You know, who knows? Probably still in the material world. Right? It's unlikely that they by now would have taken birth as a devotee. Of course, you never know, you know. Sometimes you think, well, maybe just devotee is the reincarnation of Adolf Hitler. But such thoughts we should not entertain. This is not to be done. Right? We should think good of the Vaishnavas. Right? So theoretically, of course, anything is possible. Anyone could have gotten the mercy. Even Caesar, Napoleon, and all others could have by now also gotten the mercy of Lord Chaitanya. But on the other hand, with all these sinful activities that have been committed, they might as well be somewhere in the hellish regions, right? We don't know. And any devotee, any living being that doesn't take to devotional service goes up and down in the material universe. Brahmanda Brahmite Kuna Bhagyavana Jeev. Only the fortunate living being can get the mercy. So, a lecture like this and a verse like this really is obviously there to remind us that we cannot waste our time with the material energy. And we cannot get too much into playing. We have to grow up. What can I do? Yes. We cannot stay children forever. Right? Not possible. Yeah. Yeah, someone wrote to me that, like, when your parents are still alive, then you're still a child. Right? And so when they're in one sense, and then you can still play. Yeah. And maybe that's what happened to me. My parents died when I was quite young, so I couldn't play anymore. And even before they died, my father, when I was 13, my father had a major breakdown and just was totally incapable of functioning and looked at me once and said, "I'm finished." And I looked at him and I thought, it's true. He's right. And then he said, "You now have to take charge of the family." So I stopped being a child then, and because I could see he's right. I got serious. And so getting serious is not a matter of our age. It's just a matter of realizing that this world is not just a playground. That's all it is. And but some people spend a whole lifetime playing and playing, you know, and it's like old man still playing, old ladies playing, you know, they, what is that playing? That game where they throw the balls on the grass, you know, with the white suits they're wearing. You know, these old people always played. I forgot the name just now. No. That's French. No, it's another name. It comes close, but it's a little. Nee. Ik heb het over out. Anyway, it's all right. Now, especially in countries that have an English connection, maybe not so much in Holland. You know, I travel more around the world, so I see these things all the time everywhere. But you have these older people, and they. In America they play it, and in England they play it, and in Australia they play it, and in Canada they play it. It's like in many parts of the world. And you see all these old people wearing white suits, right? And they're on a lawn, and they throw their balls and over the grass. And yeah, something like this, jeu de boule in France. Anyway, whatever it is, they... sporting and playing. And then you wonder, like, are we ever going to grow up? You know, I mean, are we ever going to do something that's more meaningful? Like, I was, when I was 15, I I started to really play guitar seriously. You know, I had played a little bit before some string instruments, but then I got into it and I just played and played day and night. And after a while, I did it full time. Right? That's what I did, like 8 to 10 hours a day on the thing, you know, religiously. I was totally into it. And it's playing in my mind, and I was totally, like, into it. And for me, that was the biggest thing. And it was inconceivable that I would ever give that up. Right? And I would not have given it up. I'm sure I would be still a musician now if I was... if I hadn't become a devotee. Of course, I'm still a bit of a musician, but no more strings, you know. Because Srila Prabhupada wanted us to absorb the Vaishnava culture, and especially in a place like Vrindavan that was more in the forefront. So I felt I had to give it up. But the attachment remained for a long time. And now I would I still like, you know, the string instruments, etc. But now I just feel like, yeah, it's nice, but what's the point? Right? What's the point of giving it so much importance to make beautiful sounds, etc.? It's not enough to really do something significant in life, right? So now, how could I take it so serious, right? Just making music, right? I can't anymore. Although I love music, but the essence is the holy name, right? The essence is, the music is a support, but the holy name is what it's all about, right? Getting out of the material world, and now I can see that I can be much more than just some musician, and rather than being a musician, I'd be a sannyasi, and my life can be more meaningful in the world, right? So like that, what's the point of playing? Right? What is the point of all that? Right? Playing with sounds, playing with images, playing with the material energy. So this verse is calling for seriousness. This verse is really calling us that, like, please don't waste time. Life goes very quick, and it's a long way to go. Spirit, I mean, the way back to Krishna, it's a long path if we want to complete it nicely. So we should start it as early as possible and as soon as possible and not waste time. That is the underlying meaning of this verse. So easy to let life slip out of our hands. It's like when you scoop up some water out of a reservoir with your hands. And no, in Holland you don't do that every day. In India you might do that, right? Or with one hand, you scoop it up. You cannot just wait. You have to drink it straight away. Otherwise, the water runs through the holes in between the fingers. It just runs away. You cannot hold it in the hand. Right? So you have to be quick. Right? And in the same way, we just stand by. You know, we just stand by with time in our hands. And we don't act quickly. And it's running away. Is running away while we're just standing there looking from what shall I do? I'm not sure what I want to do with my life. Maybe I want this, maybe I want that. Let me think about it a little more. Anyway, I have time. Yeah, and already less than you had before. It's slipping through the holes in between your fingers, like anything. So that's serious. So not the kind of, it doesn't have to be serious, doesn't need to be connected to depressing, right? Oftentimes serious and depressing, right, going hand in hand, and fun and happiness are going hand in hand in the conception of people. Right? When we're laughing and having fun, yes, then happiness and seriousness, right, is associated with depression. But that's not the case, actually. It should not be that kind of serious. It should be a seriousness which is in the mode of goodness, which is peaceful. It is a matter of honesty. It is honesty and soberness that we cannot just be bewildered about the world. We must accept this world. If someone says it's a beautiful world, then you can also say it's an ugly world, right? Because the world is both beautiful and ugly. There's not only beauty, there's also ugliness, and there's plenty of ugliness. There's lots of ugliness, right? Frankenstein and as an example, right? It's not the most handsome fellow on the block, right? All kinds of ugliness, right? So whenever someone gets over the top and goes, it's a beautiful world, then maybe it is also something. And there's a need to also look at the ugly face of the world. And this is honesty. This is being sober. This is being realistic. Right? So when the devotees are sober, and say, no, I'm not going to panic about that. I'm not going to let it touch my emotions. Oh, no, it's not a beautiful world. Oh, no, there's death. Oh, no, there's suffering. Oh, no. No, this is not required, that we get all passionate about it. That's the mode of passion. Right? When we think of these things and we get emotionally all affected, no, we stay calm and detached and say, but this is the situation. Now what to do? Fortunately, we have devotional service. That's the only thing that is really important, really. And it doesn't matter where and how, but somehow or other that devotional service stays. We see that the other day in Spain, we had also one of these morning classes, and we were talking about ISKCON, this Hare Krishna movement. And well, some of us here present in this room joined quite some years ago this movement. And in those years, we had an idea that this movement would become a very beautiful kind of movement where, you know, it would just more and more people would join, and they would all become nice Vaishnavas with sikas and shaved head, and ladies with saris, head covered, and a dot and a red line, and, you know, and we all thought like that gradually that would increase and increase, and that would be the Hare Krishna movement. Yeah? So we thought it would be like a well-trimmed garden. Right? I compared it to a well-trimmed garden and took the example of an English garden. You may not be so familiar with English gardens, but English gardens are very neat gardens. The trees are all in rows, right? Small little trees in rows. And they're all cutted, they're all trimmed, they're all cut in shapes. They're not allowed to grow natural. No, no, no. Not in an English garden. We are going to neatly trim all the trees to nice shapes, and the hedges are totally square, and there are very nice little borders along the side of the grass. And in this way, the garden is very formal and very neat and clean. So we thought that the Hare Krishna movement was going to spread like an English garden, gradually expanding and expanding. But my realization is that it has become more like the Brazilian jungle. We have all kinds of Vaishnavas, and even in our own lives, it didn't always go as in a straight line. Sometimes there were curves, right, in Krishna consciousness. Sometimes we never thought it would happen, but there was a sudden detour, and a devotee found himself looking much different than he ever thought he would. Suddenly, he had a beard and a mustache, and he thought, like, boy, I thought when I shaved up that I would never have one again, and now I have one again. How did it happen? Just see. Right. So, of course, I'm not advertising that. I'm not saying, go get a beard, go get a mustache, right? Or other varieties, you know, set curl pins and go for it, you know. Let's go for all the varieties in life. Let's dye our hair pink. It's nice if we can take shelter of the traditional path of Gaudiya Vaishnavism, because that traditional path is very, very supportive and helpful. But if we cannot, and due to faith, our life has a few curves and bumps, and that's all right, you know, or all right. Anyway, that's the way it is then. No need to cry over spilled milk, they say. No need to make such a big thing about it. Let's go forward again. Let's just build up again. And let us stay with Krishna, no matter what happens. And I see devotees who have done that, you know, in spite of everything. In spite of everything. They are very much worth of respect. And I respect such devotees. I do. You know, like those who are somehow or other still here, in spite of everything that happened. They have my deepest respect. Yeah? They really do. And because that is wonderful. And I understand that they have understood something. Right? They have understood something. They have understood. This world is not worth it. Let's get out of here. Krishna, I'm yours. You know, trying to be suitable. I'm not doing a great job, but you know, please don't forget me. I'm gonna stick it out. I'll be with you. This is the mood that we have to have. That will carry us forward towards Krishna. If not in this lifetime, then we continue in the next. But this is the spirit. We should understand that we must get serious about Krishna. Okay, maybe I'll open it up for questions and comments if you are. But otherwise, it's crystal clear what you say. It's not at all. Yes, there are two ways in looking at the material world. Looking at the darkness of the material world, looking at it like the domain of Maya, and or looking at the material world as the manifestation of Krishna's energy. And when we are looking at it as Krishna's energy, we can see the beauty in this material world and appreciate Krishna. Like in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, it is actually stated that the beauty of the material world is the smile of Krishna. Which is a very nice statement, because I like it, because a smile, you know, a smile is a gesture of welcome, right? When you smile, it means you're welcoming the person, right? Yes, you know, yes, you come in my association, welcome, you know, as if you smile. That's what it's supposed, sort of the message it sends out. So the beauty of this world is the smile of Krishna. Yes, welcome, you come to me, and this beauty is very attractive, and it gives you only like a slight indication of the unlimited and much greater beauty of my spiritual realm. Right? So the beauty of this world is not only Maya, it also has an element where we can appreciate Krishna. And the whole material world also is like that. So in the Christian tradition, there were two outlooks on the world called the via negativa and the via positiva. And we see in the older church fathers, Saint Augustine and others, that they were more adhering to what they think is the via negativa, or the mood that the whole world is just a sinful place to be rejected, and that we should just look at God and the transcendental. And then we get like more in the medieval era, we get like personalities like Saint Francis of Assisi, and we get Teresa de Avila, or de Avila, actually, I should say, Espanol, de Avila. They have more the appreciation for the world as the creation of the Lord. Right? So in Vaishnavism, we recognize these two concepts both at once. Right? We're seeing that the material world is simultaneously the prison, the place where you suffer, the place where it's not just all great and beautiful, a nice, wonderful playground for us. There's too much heaviness in this world to just have a picnic. Right? I saw this movie of a picnic, and there were people, they went for a picnic, but they forgot the can opener. You know, so they had all these tins, you know, and they tried to open the tins, right? And they couldn't open them, you know. So with a rock beating on the thing, you know. And then there was some oranges, and they were in little net, and they tried to open up, and then one cut his finger on the net, right? And like the whole picnic was like that, you know. I can't remember all the details, but I do remember the net that was cutting the fingers and the tins and all the attributes for the picnic. Nothing worked, right? So it's really like the material world is such a picnic, you know. It's such a picnic, right? It's just amazing, right? Amazing how you can get caught, you know. I was in South Africa, and once we were asked a question in the audience, if there was anyone who thought that he was in control, that he was really in control of his life. And one man raised his hand, and he had a Band-Aid on his finger. It was just like hilarious, you know. So we see definitely, as devotees, we see this heavy side. But we also see simultaneously the beauty of Krishna, and we appreciate also Krishna. So we don't have to just, every time we see a beautiful sunset, say, it's all Maya. Look at that. The illusory energy is trying to get me to enjoy. You know, I'm a brahmachari or I'm a devotee. Not like that. No, we actually see, look at like how amazing Krishna has arranged this material world. Even here is so much beauty. And this is only the reflection, only the shadow. Right? I mean, the shadow of a person, you know, doesn't have the color, doesn't have all so many qualities. Only the contours. So this is only the shadow. Wait until you see the real thing, the spiritual world, substance and shadow. The beauty in the world is the smile of Krishna. I'm only repeating what I've read in the books of Srila Prabhupada. So actually it comes from him, not from me. I'm just a postman. I'm just got a job as a postman, you know. That's all. I wasn't very qualified, couldn't get any better job. I had to become a postman in the end. I deliver messages, that's what I do. Yes and no. Because Srila Prabhupada said we should desire to go back to Godhead. Didn't he say so? So, it is true that the desire to enjoy the material world is condemned, right? And that the desire to get out of the material world is also condemned as the goal of life, because it's still selfish. One is still concerned with my own position. I don't want to be in this suffering place anymore. But still, it is said that the jnani, or he who desires liberation, is more advanced than the karmi, he who desires to enjoy the material energy. Yeah? So when a devotee initially is having, is finding some inspiration in this, right, in understanding that this material world is really not like a wonderful place, that's important, see, because we are so, we should not just say, no, this is beyond me, because we still have desires to enjoy the material world. So we should also see the other side, that the material world is a horrible place, and that we should desire to go back to Godhead. Very important that we desire to go back to Godhead. And then gradually, as we are the process is devotional service, as we are surrendering more and more in devotional service, these tendencies will really disappear. And we just really, from our heart, want to serve Krishna and only Krishna. And then one day we can pray that, like Lord Chaitanya did, I have no other desire. I don't want any wealth. I don't want aristocratic birth. I don't want beautiful women. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. I don't want liberation. Just let me take birth in this world, you know, again and again, but serve you. But that's a little high for us now. So we should not artificially do that. Prabhupada said we should cultivate this mood of going back to Godhead, so that we at least have our focus, you know, very clear. Right? This is the priority. Because we tend to forget otherwise, and we begin to play again with the material energy. That's very dangerous. But in the ultimate, yes, all desires to be free are also not necessary. Like the playboy wanted to enjoy with the beautiful girl. The yogi, he was saying, Maya, she's Maya personified, right? The devotee simply said, let's engage her in the service of Krishna. And so, you know, for the playboy, she was good. For the yogi, she was bad. But for the devotee, said simply, yes, when she renders devotional service, then she's okay. So that was the devotee's criterion, devotional service. So ultimately, that's what we care about. Not about liberation, not about sense gratification. We care about devotional service. Yes. About the hellish planets. Well, I mean, we should see that Jeroen Bos, right, was not imagination what he was painting. Hieronymus Bos. I mean, even in Germany, you know the paintings. You've seen these paintings of Bos. You are from Holland. I'm asking him. You have seen? No, if you've seen them, then you would not. There would be no question of not remembering the paintings of Bos. No one who's seen the paintings of Bos forgets them, believe me. Bos has really painted it very nicely. You see all these paintings of people being tortured by the Yamadutas. Right? You see the Yamadutas, the devils, right? And you see how they tie up people and they put different torturing instruments in fire to make them nice and hot and pierce the living beings. Somewhere else they throw them off rocks and they just are throwing down. Now the thing is that in the hellish planets, one's body is of a different substance than the body we have here, and one doesn't die in such experience. Like, for example, there are experiences where vultures and jackals, etc., eat one's intestines while you're still alive. So you're chained up and these animals are eating the intestines, but you don't die. And it goes on again and again. Such kind. Or someone who was a real manipulator will be stitched with needles and threads. Someone who's weaving a web of manipulation will be stitched with needles and webs. Needles and threads. Someone who is a total sex maniac can embrace a red-hot form of the opposite sex. Right? A burning form of the opposite sex. Someone who was like totally into alcohol can drink red-hot lead. There are many varieties like that. There's a planet where there's an ocean of worms, where just an ocean of worms, and worm eats worm. That's the whole planet. The whole thing is just an ocean of worms that eat each other. Yeah, you can imagine which kind of people go there. There is a planet. You asked for it, right? I didn't start. Okay. You asked for it. So there's a planet which is like made of red hot copper, and the sun shines, and there's no shelter. And in the day, it's terribly hot, and one is burning and burning, and there is no escape, and just burning. And at night, it's freezing cold. And this goes on. Then there's a planet where there are the Rurus, and the Rurus are creatures. They are more envious than snakes, and they bite, right? And one will be bitten by Rurus, right? So like that, there are all kinds of hellish descriptions. And if you want to get it nicely, all the details, then you can read the fifth canto of Bhagavatam, and you can get it all there. Gangadhar Prabhu. Yeah. Yeah. Of course, the... I don't know if it's unlimited lives, longer periods of time than the sin. If the sins were committed for 1 month, then why not the punishment for 1 month also? Yeah, why a punishment of lifetime? I understand. But unlimited is a bit too much, maybe. Well, of course, the experience in hell is described as generally short, right? Life in the heavenly planets is much longer than in the human form of life, and life in the hellish planets is very short but very intense. So the experience is obviously that it lasts a long time, because you know how it is, when you really suffer, it lasts a long time. But they say that it's short. But it may be that a person has to suffer quite some birth, because it's not measured so much by the nature of time, but it's measured by the intensity of the mentality. And if a person is so much in a very, very intense mood, then he has to be cut down. See, the way karma works is a little mysterious, because, you know, it's funny, karma, right? You get a reaction, but you don't know what it's for. Right? I mean, take the example: you break your leg. You know, I mean, it's your karma. It's your karma that you broke your leg. You know, and then what are you supposed to do? Are you supposed to sit there with your leg in plaster? Are you supposed to think like, what did I do? You know, what did I do? Did I step on the toes of a Vaishnava? Well, that's a possibility. You know, what did I do? Right? That I have to break my leg? Why, especially the leg? You know, kind of a thing, right? Is that how it works? So sometimes it seems confusing. It seems to be something like a child is walking by, and just suddenly out of nowhere, you give the kid a slap, you know, bang, the kid's crying, what did you do that for? I didn't do anything. Well, you did something 5 years ago. What did I do 5 years ago? I don't remember it. I don't know. I was too small. I can't remember. You know? Anyway, you're getting it now. So karma seems to be a little bit like that, right? Blind and therefore confusing, you know. How can it bring us to the point of repentance, right, if we don't even know what we're getting punished for? Right? So how does karma work? It's confusing like that. So it doesn't seem to really work on the point of repentance. Sometimes it seems to bring a person to insight and repentance, that he really strongly feels what he gets the reaction for. One devotee, told me a heavy story. He was in a wheelchair, this devotee. And, you know, he told me, he said that before I was a devotee, I used to have a bad habit. He said, I used to catch insects and pull out the legs from the insects like that and torture them. Right? He said, and, you know, even when I became a devotee, I sometimes still did it, right? So I would go in the basement and I'd catch one, and I'd just do it. So one day I was walking in the street and I saw the truck, right? And then I woke up in the hospital, and then I couldn't walk, and later I heard that and was in a wheelchair. He said, and I know why I'm in this wheelchair. He said, I know. So sometimes somebody may have an insight, but many times it doesn't work on that level. Right? Many times the karmic reactions are just diminishing our facility. You know, our facility is taken away and we get reduced. You know, our power is gone. We get reduced. Purna musika bhav, become a mouse again. Suddenly we are small again. Everything we can reduce, and we have to go through the frustration of having less power. Right? And that automatically makes one more humble. Right? When you're a giant, you know, so who can tell me something? Right? But when you're like very small, so well, you're a little careful. Yes, sir, of course, you know. Right? You develop a different mentality. So Krishna does it like that. He reduces us from time to time. I've been reduced several times this lifetime. And, it's intense. And that's what he does. And we learn that way, not knowing why. So sometimes it may take quite some lifetimes to really bring the mood of humility out of a person, which is required to destroy the false pride, which led to the offensive behavior that a person had. That's why it's sometimes for an offense that has been committed in a shorter time, the reaction may be long, or may come over a longer time. Congo bongo. No, it is not like that. These instruments can all be used in the service of Krishna, and congo, bongo, and guitar. It sounds very nice. Sounds musical in itself. You're a poet, so that's okay. We can use. But it depends on what your position is in devotional service. For me, as a sannyasi, it would be not the best if I would sit here and sing Radha Madhava with my electric guitar, you know. Radha Madhava. We could do a whole thing, of course. Bring the congos and the bongos the swinging swami, right? But I could do that, you know, I could do it. I can, you know, you'd be surprised, but I can. But I don't know if that would be like create the most faith. You know, some people might take me cheap. Like when I saw Bill Clinton for the campaign of president, right, jump up with some dancing girls playing a saxophone, I was thinking, come on, Bill, you know, really, you know, like, give us a break, you know. I mean, do you really have to go Hollywood, you know, to become the president of the United States, right? Life is not just showbiz, Bill, you know. Can't you be serious for once in your life, right? It did bring out that mood, you know. So in that way, if I would, for sannyasi also, I would have to keep a certain amount of... So therefore for me it's better I forget it, and I'm happy also for that, you know. So it depends where we are, what we use in the service of Krishna, what our role is. We need some devotees who are just going to represent the Vaishnav tradition, because we need the Vaishnav tradition. We are a movement of devotees and it takes all kinds. I'll just say it for Lokamata, who came late. In the beginning, we used to think that the Hare Krishna movement was going to be a very beautiful, you know, nice movement that was spread with nice model devotees, all saris, and, you know, and dhotis and all that, right? We all used to think, you know, straight Hare Krishnas. And I compared it to an English garden, you know, like, you know, these gardens with nicely trimmed trees and straight hedges and edges and, you know, nice stones. But over the years, I realized that the Hare Krishna movement is not an English garden, but more like the Brazilian jungle, right? And it became like that, yeah. So in our Brazilian jungle, it takes all kinds. You know, it takes all kinds. That's okay. But we need some people in the Brazilian jungle who keep the tradition also. You know, we're ready. I mean, all kinds of people can be Vaishnavas in all kinds of ways, but some people have to keep the tradition. That is also our duty. And otherwise, we're going to lose the essence. Maybe, yeah. That half man, half house, I never saw that. I have not read about that in the Bhagavatam. Anyway, maybe he went a little bit imagination also. I haven't studied. I don't remember that half man, half machine. I had a Europe painter after all, and they study paintings in a different way than people like me, you know. But I used to have a book and of Boss, and I just saw people. I saw Yamaduta type of people torturing others, and that's straight the Bhagavatam. And the type of torturing they were doing, that was all in the Bhagavatam. So if you really want to know all the details of the hellish planets, read the fifth canto. Read it again. And then put it next to the paintings of Boss and then point out where there's the differences. And then you become the authority on that. Yeah, that's existentialism. You know, that's outdated. It's old fashioned. That philosophy. Yeah. Intelligent people can understand, even in the material world. You know, intelligent people who think, who are thinkers, they understand. But modern life does not allow people to think. You know, the whole thing is, don't think. Whatever you do, don't think. Don't think. Stop. Thinking is dangerous. Don't do it. Don't think. Stay busy all the time. Make sure you don't think. Work, work, work. Every moment, be engaged. Sport and play. Watch TV. Listen to something. Don't think. Never, ever, ever think. Don't go quietly somewhere to a place where you're alone with your mind. Very dangerous. Whatever you do, don't think. Right? This is modern times. And we'll tell you how to think, right? You have a need for so many things. You want to buy, yes you do, all these goods that we are advertising. So there are vicious people who hire expert psychologists to manipulate the masses to become consumers. There are books written about it, right? If you read, you buy a book on economy, you can buy books on the consumption society and can see how there's a professional attempt, right, to turn us into consumers. In other words, to manipulate our minds, to make us think the way they want us to think. Right? So don't think independently. We'll tell you how to think. This is going on. It's called economic development. Yeah. Yeah, but I find your statement, I find it like false. I think that there are some intelligent men who come to the conclusion that there's no God, and there are many intelligent and learned and great thinkers who come to the conclusion that there is a God. Because you'll find it in any circle of people, you find these two, you know, the theist and the atheist, that you'll always find. So it's a one-sided print presentation to say that amongst great thinkers they come to that conclusion. It's totally, that's not true. Many are actually accepting. Many intelligent, highly intelligent men can understand there must be a God, without a doubt. Well, there are definitely different time scales in different areas, right? So like, the 100 years of Lord Brahma, right, are different than the 100 years on the hellish planet. That is for sure. So there's a different time moves in a different way there. We just discussed it the other day, that time in the mode of ignorance moves fast and time in the mode of goodness moves very slow. Yeah. So in the hellish planets, time is goes very quick. Very quick, actually. Yeah. Yes. Oh yeah, many heavenly planets. Yes. No. The same. We are in the middle. There are 14 planetary systems. 7 are below. 7 are above. Right. So there are above the middle planetary systems. There are heavenly planets, and then above the planets of above that is called Swarg, and above Swarg begin the planets where sages and yogis can go, right? Those who were celibate and who were like trying through different types of austerity or processes to become self-realized. Then there are different planets where they go. So those are the higher planets, even above the heavenly planets where you enjoy for a long, long time. And there are different varieties of heavenly planets also. Yeah. So there's a great variety of heavenly planets, a variety of hellish planets, and planets for great self, for those who are into self-realization. Generally speaking, it's very difficult to practice spiritual life in those conditions where there's so much enjoyment. I mean, when you're like, even in this world, you know, if you get millions and millions of dollars, right, and you know you have everything you desire for a moment, for a little moment, you may forget your spiritual life for just a few days, isn't it? It would be easy when everything starts to work very well materially. So that's how it is there. It just is better than anything you can imagine in this world. It all works really well. So you can imagine how hard it is to get serious over there. The playing tendency becomes very strong. Yeah. Both. It is true that we may suffer immaterial life and then take shelter of the association of devotees, and then we suffer again in the association of devotees. We may join this movement and we may think now our problems are solved, but they're not. You know, we find that also amongst devotees many difficulties in social interaction exist, and sometimes you even think, well, my friends from before were much friendlier than the devotees, right? And it's sometimes true. But we should know that in ISKCON may not be the answer. This may not be what we're looking for. ISKCON is the means by which we are attaining the goal, which is the spiritual world, and there everything is perfect. Prabhupada said about ISKCON, don't expect that it's going to be utopia, right? It's not, that's not what it's going to be. It is a facility for people who are conditioned to come and purify themselves and each other. And since they bring with them all their impurities, you can expect all kinds of things, so we should not be surprised. So sometimes we may find that it's very difficult to belong to such a movement, that we must tolerate, because we should see it carries this process, so we should stay close, and we can try and improve things, but we are not so great that we can just turn it all around. It's not so easy. Yeah? I mean, we try to improve what we can and what we cannot, that we have to tolerate. That's the way the cookie crumbles. Yeah? And when the cookie crumbles, what can you do? Then you get crumbs, and better crumbs than nothing. You know, you have to accept it. The way the cookie crumbles. With that, I think it's time to end now. You had something? You're waving your hand. We have people now also. just calm down. You know, it's like we have very religious people nowadays also. So don't worry. It's, yeah. You can read the publications of the BI, of the latest conference of science and religion. There are two volumes out. The second one is the green volume, which is very up to date. Has many, many famous, prominent scientists speaking out very nicely in favor of God consciousness, appreciating Vedic culture and all that. So there's no dispute. The demons, the asuras and the suras will always be present, and the devotees and the non-devotees in all spheres of life. Wherever you go, there will be train conductors who will be devotees, there will be train conductors who will be atheists, there will be football players who are devotees. Satyananda Maharaj was just telling how he has one disciple in Croatia who is a famous national football player and who's on TV. And like whenever he scores a goal, he goes like this, you know. So it became a big thing, you know, like they're asking on the TV, why are you doing like this? You know, you should go like this, right? He says, no, this is better. He said, because this means I am the doer. And this means I did it by the grace of God, you know. Right? It's all like that he's preaching as a big football player. So as Maharaj was saying, generally the audience in the football stadium has only half a brain or a quarter brain, right? But Krishna arranges it, you know, that they are getting the transcendental knowledge also. Okay, with that, we'll stop. Thanks very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.